We're holding about the middle of Chof Aleph on the day.
Chof
Aleph on the day. Yeah. Okay, we said like this. We had a Mishnah, we said we had a Mishnah in Shkolim that said there was a Takana of Beis Din, a Tanai of Beis Din, that the Kohenim are able to use sort of Hekdesh. And we discussed, what are they allowed to use it for? First, we thought it meant that when they're bringing a korban, then they're able to use the sort instead of having to bring their own sort for the purpose, but that they're not allowed to use it when they're eating kachim. We said that's not what it means. We said what it means is they're allowed to use the sort for eating their korbanos, for eating their portions of the korban, which they're eating in the azara. However, they're not allowed to use the sort for the chulin food that goes along with it. Like this, you're supposed to eat chulin food before you eat, or truma, before you eat kachim. This way, you're not eating the kachim like you're hungry, which is not really a recovered dicker way of eating them. You're supposed to eat it a la soza, like you're almost full, sort of like what we do with the appetite. So they can use the salt. No, so that's the thing. Therefore, so instead of eating the kodshin to begin with when they're hungry, what they should be doing is they should be eating, just like we do on Pesach night, what we do with the apokomen, where we eat the apokomen a la soza, because the apokomen is meant to represent the korban Pesach. The idea is we have a whole meal before that, we have shulchan aruch, and at the end we have the apokomen representing the korban Pesach. That's how it was when they ate. That's how it was when there was an actual korban Pesach. That's how it will be when Mashiach comes, Meherav Yamenu. That there will be a korban Pesach. Same idea. We'll have the chagiga, for example, first, or other kolen meat, if the chagiga is not available for whatever reason, and then the korban Pesach at the end. Similarly, over here, when the kohenim are eating their portions of a chatas or asham or mincha or what have you, they're supposed to be eating kolen or truma first, and then they eat for the covered for the korban, and then they eat the korban al hasova, that chulin or truma food that they're eating before it, we don't allow them to use salt from kodshim for that purpose. They can eat it. They can. According to Rashi, we said Rashi would hold that you can't bring chulin into the azara at all. You would have to understand that it means they have to eat this chulin or truma outside the azara and then come inside and eat kodshim. Tosfos says maybe they could bring it into the azara as long as they're not doing azara with it. But either way, we're not going to allow them salt for that purpose. Well, according to Tosfos, you could, as long as you're not doing it. Okay. Fine. So that's where we were up to.
Do we have examples of the Kohanim bringing?
Well, we don't have. I mean, we don't know of examples. According to what we're saying over here, is that they're bringing in. We're talking about whether they can use salt of kodshim for the cholin or not. So the implication is that they're able to bring the colon inside. Yeah. All right, so let's go on. So we're holding the line begins with Lahu, about the middle of the upper.
In the middle of the...
Just about the middle of the upper. The line begins with Lahu.
Oh, yeah.
So Amalei Ravina L'Ravashi. So Ravina says to Ravashi, continuing this discussion, Halki Namim Eskabla. Yes, it's logical to say that that's what we mean, that we give them the salt from Hefkish to eat kodshim, but not to eat the cholin that goes along with the kodshim, because the Isak Dat Maila Korbonim, Hochinami Mistabra means indeed, it is Nami also, Mistabra is logical. The Isak Dat Maila Korbonim Lemoyah, because what are you telling me? Our original assumption was that it meant the korbanum means that we'll give them salt from Hestish to salt korbanus that they're bringing, but we won't give them salt for eating at all. That was our initial assumption. If we learned it that way, what would that mean? Time of the Asni Beis Din. What would the reason be? Only because Beis Din made a tnai to that effect, are we going to give them salt for their own korbanus? Holy Asni Beis Din Loy, implying that if Beis Din had not made such a tnai, then we wouldn't even give them salt to salt their own korbanus. They would have to bring salt from their houses. We have to consider, even by Yisrael, Hashtag Yisrael, Yavinam Matno, let's consider, for Yisrael, the Beis Mikdash provides salt, when a Yisrael brings a korban, the Beis Mikdash provides salt, but yeah, as we're going to see. L'Kohenim Lo Yavinam, so what would be the Havam in it to say that we wouldn't provide it to Kohenim when they bring a korban? Obviously, hold that thought. But right now, if we give it to the Yisrael for free from a Hekdesh, how much more so to the Kohenim? So obviously, there's no Havam in it to say that we wouldn't give them salt for their Korbanos. It must be that we're talking about we give them salt to eat the Korbanos, but not to eat the Korban. And how do we know that salt for a person's Korban, for Yisrael's Korban, is supplied by Hekdesh? Titania, because we learn in a Blaiser. Yochol ha'oimah harei alai mincha yovim melach mitzvah beisoy. You would think if somebody says, I obligate myself to bring a mincha, and we said before the mincha, or at least the chomus of it, has to be salted, you would think he has to provide salt from his house. Kederach shemevi levoina mitzvah beisoy. Just as we obligate him to bring levoina from his house, the hektish doesn't provide the levoina, he has to provide that.
Why?
You would think if he has to provide the levoina. You would think if he has to provide the levoina, he has to provide the salt. We're going to discuss. Fine, that's not the point. The point is, you would think, just like you would think, when he says harei alai mincha, he's obligated to supply all of the components of the mincha. We know he has to supply the flour and the oil. There's not even a have on it, to the contrary. We know he also has to supply the levoina, because the levoina is also a necessity of the mincha. So you would think he also has to supply the salt, because the salt is also needed. Okay. The dinhu. Now we should consider like this. We should be able to use a binyanav, a mamatinu. The dinhu means we should be able to deduce it logically as follows. Nema hobe mincha v'hobe melach. You have the pasuk is telling you bring a mincha, meaning if you obligated yourself to bring a mincha, then you're obligated to fulfill what you said. V'hobe melach. The pasuk also says when you bring a mincha or any other carbon, then you have to bring salt with it. We also have the Torah telling us that you have to bring a mincha, and when you do, you have to bring levoina. So we should equate them. So just like levoina presumably comes from his house, so you should have to assume the salt comes from his house. But on the other hand, continues the Braisa, or maybe you should go, klach is short for lech lecha. It means take yourself in this lederach zu, according to this other direction. Consider, maybe you should draw an analogy between the salt and something else. Nama havi mincha v'havi melach. Sure, it says that you should bring a mincha and that you should bring salt. V'nema havi mincha v'havi eisim. But we also have, you have to bring a mincha, and along with the mincha, you have to have wood to burn the mincha. We know that wood has to be brought. Ma eisim mishal sibur. Now, just like wood has to be brought from the sibur, as we will discuss later on that phase, we'll discuss how the Braisa knows for a fact that wood is brought by the sibur, but so given that the eisim is brought from the sibur, afmelach mishal sibur, maybe the salt should be brought by the sibur. So we don't know. On the one hand, we could argue salt is like levoina. On the other hand, we could argue that salt is like wood. Well, therefore, nidah l'midoina. So we have to consider which one is it more. Is it more like? Let's figure like this. Donin davar hanoyik b'chalas vachim. Let's deduce a thing that applies to all korbanos, which is salt, midavar hanoyik b'chalas vachim, from something else, namely wood, that also is needed for all korbanos. All korbanos need salt. I'll call korban chatak l'malach. We learned before. All korbanos require wood to burn them, or at least some parts of them. So therefore, that's a more logical thing to deduce. Don't try to prove salt from levoina. Because levoina doesn't apply to all carbonates. You only bring levoina with a mincha. So therefore, it's more logical to say if you have to figure out what is salt more similar to, it's probably more similar to wood than to levoina. Well, then if wood is brought from the sibur, then salt would also be. However, continues the Braisa, but maybe you should take yourself in another direction. Maybe you should figure in a different way, though. You can say that salt is more like levoina, because donin davar haboyim of a kli echad, and draw an analogy between what something that comes in the same keli. Because what do? When you put the chomus in a keli, you put the salt on it right there in the same keli. Midavar haboyim of a kli echad. From something else which comes in the one keli, named the levoina. When you first bring a mincha, you have flour and oil mixed together and levoina sprinkled on top.
So we should compare it to levoina.
Don't compare it to wood. Sure, every korban needs wood, and just like every korban needs salt. But on the other hand, the salt comes in the same keli with the mincha. The wood doesn't come in the same keli with the mincha. So we're back to, how do we know which one to analogize the salt to? Do we compare it to the levoina, and in that case, the individual has to bring it, or do we compare it to the wood, and in that case, the sibur has to bring it? But ultimately, we wouldn't know. We could go back and forth like that. Therefore, we have a pasuk telling us one way, telling us, bris melach olam, who is therefore like this. You have a pasuk regarding the kodshim that says bris melach olam. There's a bris that salt that salt should be brought with all korbanos. Bris means eternal. On the simple meaning, on the pshat meaning, whenever in Tanakh it says the word olam, it always means time. We have places where we darshan that it means the world, like Olam Chesed Yibana, but even in those places, many of them approach say that on the surface, what it means is time-wise, whoever Chesed is built. Anyway, the point is that, yeah, Bris Melach Olam Hu means it's an eternal covenant of thought. The context is over there, we learned this the other day, the context is talking about the matnas, the 24 matnas kohona, that it's a covenant with Hashem, light, which is light thought, just like thought never spoils, neither does the covenant of Hashem with the Kohenim ever spoil. Tosfos over here, and more collectively, yeah, and there's also mentioned, yeah, but here we're talking specifically the one with the Kohenim, but you're right, there's also the covenant with the Jewish people can never be broken, there's a pasuk that mentions the covenant with, that Hashem made with David, that his descendants, that all future kings of the Jewish people will come from him, is also Bris Melach HaOlam. Anyway, Tosfos over here, and also in the earlier Sugya on Daf Yud Tes, says no, the Girsa should not be Bris Melach Olam Hu, because, yes, that's talking about Matnas Kohuna, but that's not specifically talking about bringing his fourth on Korbanus. That's talking about that Hashem is saying to Aaron, you and your descendants are going to have these 24 Matnas Kohuna forever, just like thought is forever. No, rather, Tosfos says, the correct Girsa is, V'loy Sashkis Melach Bris Alekhano. You should never let, they're not, you should never make, you should never cease having the thought of the covenant of Hashem on your Korbanus. So there, clearly, you have the word Bris in connection with thought on the Korbanus. Anyway, the point is, you have the word bris in connection with thought. By the Lechem Atonim, the Torah also uses the word bris. That should be from Bnei Yisrael as an eternal covenant. So when we have Malahalon Mishal Tzibur, just like Lechem Atonim comes from the funds of the Tzibur. From Bnei Yisrael. Afkan Mishal Tzibur. The same way here, the thought comes Mishal Tzibur. So that's how we know. So the word we're going to deal with later on Dach Chofei, how we know that word comes from the Tzibur. But now, at least, based on the Zeder Shalom, Bris, we've established that it's Hektish that provides the thought. So that's what we're saying before, therefore. So obviously, if thought is being provided to Yisrael for his Kohen, certainly it's going to be provided to the Kohen, and there's no reason on the face of it to think, although we're going to say in a minute now, there is a reason, but for the moment, we assume that if it's given to Yisrael, then surely it's given to a Kohen. Therefore, of necessity, when we said that thought that based in had to make a t'nai, that thought is given to the Kohen for one purpose, but not for another, it must have meant to eat the Korbanos versus to eat the Cholin. Because it can't mean that based in had to make a t'nai to give them thought for their Korbanos, because that we said that even Yisrael is given thought. However, Mordechai says to Rav Ashi, not necessarily do you have to explain it that way. You could say that when we ask before that if salt is given to a Yisrael for his Korbanos, how much more so it should be given to the Kohenim, why do we need a Tanai based into that effect? Not necessarily would that be the case. This is what Rav Shisha Brejid of Idi said, that when we said before that salt is given to them only, when we said that salt is given to them likarbonum, but not la'achila, it doesn't necessarily have to mean, like we said before, that it means it's given to them for eating kodshim, but not for eating cholin. Rav Shisha Breder of Idi says that actually, no, loy nitzrucha elo ben bukhri. This t'nai basin that we're saying is actually only needed according to ben bukhri, who argues that the kohenim don't really have a share in the korbanos tzibur, and therefore we need a special thing to say. Therefore, we need a special thing to say that nevertheless they're entitled to thought for their korbanos. Namely, like who is Ben Bukhri? The Chan. So we learn in another Mishnah in Shkalim, Amar Rav Yehuda. So Rav Yehuda says as follows: Heyed Ben Bukhri biyavne. Ben Bukhri, who was a kohen, gave Adris in Yavne. So this is after the Korban, the Pashtus. But even so, they're still learning Hilchos Kodshim, just as we're learning them now. So Ben Bukhri, this is the second Korban. So we know you have the famous thing, Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai asks that the Fionis send the Yavne v'chachamera, so the Sanhedrin moved to Yavne. And so Ben Bukhri gave Adris over there in Yavne, saying as follows: Kol Koyin sheshoykel, any Koyin who gives Master Shekel, Einai Choyte is not committing a sin by doing that. Meaning, in other words, Ben Bukhri is saying basically that the Kohenim in principle should be Kosher from Master Shekel, argues Ben Bukhri.
Why?
Why? So Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi on Shkolim over there that says like this. The Pasuk tells us who is to give Master Shekel, Kol ha'over alaf kodim. Now what does over mean? The word over can mean, the word over al kodim can mean anybody who passed through to be counted, which therefore would exclude Kohenim, and Tosfos says also Levim, because the Kohenim and Levim were not counted in the same way as the rest of Bnei Israel. We know in Parashas Bamidbar, Moshe goes and counts all the twelve Shvatim, but he doesn't count Shevet Levi in the same way. Afterwards, Hashem tells him go and count them from a month old, and he goes around to each tent, and Hashem tells him how many people there are in that tent. So they weren't over Alat Kodim. So therefore, Ben Bukhri argues they're Potter from Amos Hashem. They were counted, but it wasn't over Alap Kodim. They didn't go through and each of them give a master shekel to be counted. That's what I just said. Rashi mentions over there on the Pasuk that the Alpi Hashem, that Moshe went around from one tent to another of the Levim, and Hashem announced, and a Bastel announced to him there were X number of people in that tent, and then that he counted that are 30 days old or over.
The rest of the people were counted.
The rest of the people were counted. Each one of them passed by. Each one of them had to bring their proofs of Yichus and whatever, and they had to give a Master Shekel, and the Master Shekel were counted, yes. But Shevet Levi, not. So therefore, Ben Bukhri argues, therefore, the Shevet Levi is possible for Master Shekel. On the other hand, Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai, who disagrees with him, as we're going to say in a second, he learns the Pasuk, Kolo Over, Alaf Kodim, means Kolo Over, means anybody who went through the Yamsuf. Shevet Levi went through the Yamsuf as well, the older of people did. Therefore, they're equally high as everybody else. Okay. Tosfos, well,
where did he get that?
He said, Kolo Over means anybody who passed through the Yamsuf. Also, Tosfos talks. Okay, so it says Alaf Kodim means Kolo Over. Anybody who passed through Alaf Kodim has to be counted. Okay. Also, Tosfos says there were different donations of Master Shekel. Rashi mentions on the Pasuk actually in Parshas Truma that there were three, or in Parshas Kitisa rather, that there were three different donations of Master Shekel. One for the Adonim, one for buying the Korbanos, and then there was Nadava that anybody could give. So the Levim weren't exempt from all of those. The Levim were exempt from one of those, fine, from the Truma for Adonim, but they were higher than the other ones. Okay. Anyway, so Ben Bukhri says, nevertheless, even though the Kohenim are potter from Master Shekel, he's saying any Kohen who does give Master Shekel, any Choyte, is not committing an Aveira by doing that. Meaning, in other words, Ben Bukhri is saying they don't have to, so you would think, therefore, if a Kohen gives a Master Shekel, then that's going to be a problem, because now you have his personal money is mixed in with the money of the Sivir, now they're going and buying Korbanos Sivir with it, and you have a problem, because the Korbanos Sivir have to belong to the Sivir. He says that's not a problem. Not the Kohenim. We're talking about the money of the Kohenim. If Ben Bukhri is arguing like this. If the Kohenim is potter for Master Shekel, then it comes out, if a Kohen does give Master Shekel, what happens? Later on, that Master Shekel, together with all the other ones, is used to buy the Korbanos Sivir, and therefore you have a problem. The Korbanos Sivir has to belong to the Sivir. In fact, they have to belong to the Sivir. They can't belong to a Yachid. However, Ben Bukhri says they're not committing an Aveira because they do give it over to the Sivir. So therefore it becomes the Sivir's money.
Once the Kohen gives him that's his.
That's the point. In other words, he's most of it to the Sivir. The Aveira concept the Gemara talks about in other places in Tract, you have a concept, sometimes you say Shemaloyim Sirenu Yafa Yafa, that he might not 100% give it over to the Sivir. So Ben Bukhri is saying we're not worried about that. He does 100% give it over to the Sivir. However, he's not obligated to do it in the first place. Yeah. On the Lord of Yechon and Zakkai, so Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai says to Ben Bukhri, Loiki, that's not how it goes. You're misinterpreting the statement. Ella, you have to rearrange the words in your statement. Kol Koyin, She'ena Shekel, Choytet. Any Koyin who does not give Master Shekel is committing an Aveda. The Koyinim are just as much chayiv in Master Shekel as any other Yid. And Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai says, so where are you, Ben Bukhri, and the other Kohen, and where do you get this notion that you're called to come Master Shekel? By the way, Tosfos points out, the way that Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai phrases it, Shah Kohenim Joshin Mikra Zal Asman, makes it sound like Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai himself is not a Kohen. However, Tosfos wins, because it sounds like he's saying the Kohenim douching this for themselves, for their own benefits, implying like he himself is not a Kohen. However, Tosfos wins from another place that maybe Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai was a Kohen. Okay, anyway. El Shah Kohenim Joshin Mikra Zelasman. So Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai says, so where are you, Ben Bukhri, and your other fellow Kohenim? Where do you get this notion that you're potter for Master Shekel? That Ben Bukhri came and said that you're potter. It's like this. Shah Kohenim Joshin Mikra Zelasman. The Kohenim douchen the following Pasuk to benefit themselves. They douchen it against Halacha, but they douchen it as follows. Like this. The Pasuk says, V'chol minchas koyen kolol piyoloisa ochol. The pasuk says that any mincha brought by a koyen has to be completely burnt on the mizbeach. You're not allowed to eat it. So Ben Bukhri and the other koyenim argue like this. Hoyo v'oimer u'shtei alechem v'lechem aponim shalonu hi. Well, after all, if koyenim are given master shekel, it comes out that the korban oimer and the shtei alechem and the lechem aponim are all being brought, among others, they're being bought with money that came from the koyenim. therefore heich ne'echolim. So they argue, in that case, how would you be able to eat them? The fact is, you do eat the korban omer, and you do eat the shteil lachem, and you do eat the lachem afonim. That implies, says Ben Bukri, so that implies, that's the point, the kohen eat it. But if it was really considered a minchas kohen, they couldn't eat it, it would have to be completely burnt. So therefore, Ben Bukri is, so therefore, Rabbi Yechon and Zakeh is saying, apparently you, Ben Bukri, and your fellow kohenim are thinking that why can't a kohen give master shekel? Well, because then these things are going to be considered a minchas kohen.
And yet, it doesn't, and yet
Rabbi Yechon and Zakeh says, not so. Among other things, the Gemara points out in Erechon, because since most of the money for them does come from Yisrael, we're not worried about the meals of money of kohenim that's mixed in. So it's not considered a minchas kohen. Minchas kohen means when a private, when an individual kohen brings a mincha, then it's also to eat, and the whole thing has to be burned on the mizbeach. Here it's not an individual thing. Here it's a thing of the simmer. Okay, so now we have to figure out, before we get to how this is relevant to the salt situation, we have to first analyze Ben Bukri. We have to go back and analyze Ben Bukri's idea. All of Ben Bukri, so we have to ask, according to Ben Bukri, what does he mean then when he says that according to him, if a Kohen gives max the shekel, there's nothing wrong with it? Kibin doesn't have any amnes, how could a problem? Kibin lach chilul and mechayiv le'isuyi, if he's taken not chayiv to bring max the shekel, ki maisi nami chojahu, then if he brings, he should be considered a sinner. Jika maisi chama ayo chulun la'azara, because he's causing chulun to be brought into the azara, because it's true, since he wasn't obligated to bring it, now it comes out that some of the karbonas brought with that don't really belong to Hekish. And the answer is, as we just said, the ma'isi u'masa lahim u'sibur. The answer is sure. Ben Bukri is saying he could bring it. If he brings it, then we know he gives it over 100% to the sibur.
He's not a choyter.
That's the thing. Ben Bukri is arguing like this. They're not obligated to bring it because kolo over alaf kodim. On the other hand, if they do bring it, then we say they are most direct to the sibur. Therefore, you don't have a problem with pulling ba'azara. Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai says, Ben Bukri, you're wrong. Kohenim are required to bring max the shekel, just like every other yid.
When
they give it, then of course, like any other yid, they give it for life.
The Kohenim and the Israel give money to the...
Everybody gives max the shekel, and the money that goes into the lishka. Three times a year, money is taken out from the lishka and then used to buy stuff that money, among other things, goes to the shteil lechem, yeah?
No, it goes to the shteil lechem, but it comes from Kohanim.
That's the point. So Rabbi Yechon and Zakeh is saying, apparently the Kohanim are under the impression that if they were to give max the shekel and then some of that money was used to buy the shteil lechem, some of the lechem upon him or whatever, then you'd have a problem. And Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai is saying it's not so. That only applies to a korban yochid, not to a korban sibur.
So 1 second, who says that what applies to shteil lechem applies to the salt?
That's now that we established that we have the opinion of Ben Bukri, who says that the kohenim are not obligated to give max the shekel, now we can return to the salt situation. Therefore, Sakdat Hamina, now like this, once we have Ben Bukri's opinion that the Kohenim are not giving money towards the operating expenses of the Beit Mikdash, because they're not obligated to give Maksa Shekel, therefore you would think, maybe, Ki Zoch Lehu Rachmana Yisrael, when does the Torah give the Schus who does the Torah give a schus based on the limud that we said before, that we said that we're from the word bris melach olam hu and me'eis b'nei Yisrael bris olam, who is entitled to salt from Hekdesh for their korbanos? Li Yisrael, only for Yisraelim. The Islahu Lishka, because they have money that goes into the Lishka in the Beit Mikdash. So now the Torah says, fine, since you gave in money towards that Lishka, you gave Maksa Shekel, therefore you're entitled now to use salt that was bought with money from that Lishka for Korbanos that you brought. The Kohenim, the less low Lishka, you would think, according to Ben Bukri, maybe since the Kohenim don't give money into the Lishka, not a chet according to him, but they're not required to. Therefore, maybe the Torah is not mezakeh and salt. That is the point, therefore. So we could say, when we started saying before that loshanu ela lekorbanim avalachil aloi, it could actually conceivably mean that the kohenim are not actually entitled to salt, according to Ben Bukri, are not entitled to salt from Hekdesh for salting a korban that they bring, never mind what they're eating. They're not even entitled to salt for a korban that they're bringing, because they're not donating to the lishka, they're not donating master shekel, according to Ben Bukri, therefore they shouldn't be entitled to salt. And therefore, Kamash Malan, and therefore we're saying, according to that opinion, that is why we needed a Tanai Basin to say that nevertheless we will give the Kohenim a break and allow them to use salt from Hekdesh.
Is that
So even though they don't contribute. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, that guy, which is our lacha, in other words, that tanai wouldn't be necessary. Koyanim are entitled to thought from Hekdesh just as much as anybody else. But according to Ben Bukhari, we would need the tanai basis. Right, that's the point. So according to Ben Bukhari, the tanai... Right, so okay, so according to... So it comes out like this. According to Ben Bukhari, the tanai therefore allows them to use thought for karbonis that they bring. It does not allow them to use thought for anything that they're going to eat. Not kodshim and not kol.
Even if
they pay for it? Yeah, no, they would have to use thought of their own, in other words, for those purposes. According to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, since Koyanim are also obligated to bring Master Shekel, and some of that Master Shekel is used to buy thought for Hekdesh, therefore they're entitled to thought for Korbanos that they bring, just like everybody else is. They're also, Tanai Basin then adds that will also allow them to use thought from Hekdesh to thought the pieces of the Korbanos that they're eating. However, we don't allow them to use thought of Hekdesh for the cholin that they're eating before they eat kodshim. Right. Okay. Now, getting...
Nobody's allowed.
No, that's what it's saying, right? Right. Well, that's what we're saying. In other words, we're the only one who needs the colon before kodshim. Okay. Right. Okay, so now we mentioned in the Braise before, when so that's not lawful. It's like what they're saying. We said before, in the Braise that we brought before on Chafalachom and Beis, we were discussing back and forth how we know who has to bring thought. Is it the Yochid or the Siddur? And at one point in the discussion, we said we should draw an analogy between salt and wood. Just like the wood is brought by the Siddur, so the salt has to be brought by the Siddur. So now we have to deal with that detail. The Eitzin, the Pshitele, the Tana, the Michelle Siddur, Manolan. Where does the Tana get with such an obvious thing that the Siddur provides wood for a korban? Maybe every time a Yochid brings a korban, he has to provide wood for it as well. So it's like this, the Tana, because we learn in a Braisa. Yochol ha'omer harei olai oila. You would think that if a person says I obligate myself to bring an oila, you'll be eitzim mitzvah beis. Say maybe he should be obligated to bring wood from his house. Kederach she maybe nesachim mitzvah beis. Just like he has to bring the nesachim with the korban from his house. By the way, when we say nesachim mitzvah beis, we don't mean he would actually necessarily bring the actual flour and wine and oil. He would pay for it. In fact, the Mishnah, there's another Mishnah in Shtolim that describes the system they had in the Beis Mikdash, because the problem is not everybody knows how to make it properly according to the specifications of the Beis Mikdash. You have to make it vatara, etc. So what they had is they had two offices in the Beis Mikdash. One where they had one where they had tokens or seals, chesamos it's called, and the other one where they had the actual flour and wine and oil. What you would do is you'd go to the first official over there. You had Yochanan and Yachia, were the names of the two people in charge. You'd go to the one who was in charge of the chesamos. You'd pay him money. He would give you a chesam. He'd give you a piece of paper stamped with a stamp that said this person is entitled to X amount in the nesachim or whatever. And then you'd go to the other office where they actually have the flour and wine and oil, and they would measure it out for you. Okay. Anyway, the point is, when we say maybe stuff and it says basic, we mean the money for it. Okay, the point is, so how do we know that a person doesn't have to bring wood or money for wood from his house? No, so like this, because the pasuk says, the pasuk says that you burn the korban on top of the wood, which is on the fire, which is on the mizbeach. So in other words, we have a hekesh between the wood between the wood and the fire versus the mizbeach. Ma mizbeach mishal tzibur, just like the mizbeach comes from the funds of the tzibur, the mizbeach is built using funds from the tzibur, and in fact, as we learned at the end of Zvachim, when David HaMelech bought the area of the mizbeach from Aravna, he collected money from the entire Jewish people for that purpose. So the mizbeach has to come from the tzibur. We said over there, we have different opinions over there, it's called 50, one pasuk is 50, one pasuk is 600, so does it mean 50 from each shevet, 600 total, does it mean 50 for that immediate area, 600 for the larger area, we had a few different opinions over there, anyway. So therefore, ma mizbeach, mishal tzibur, af eitz and ba'esh, mishal tzibur, the same way, the wood and the fire, meaning I guess like flints or whatever, to strike sparks or whatever, have to come from the tzibur. Divrei Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon. So therefore, so that's how we know with Pshitus that the wood comes from the Siddur. Continues the Braise, so Rav Elazar ben Shamor, we learn a different thing from the Hekesh between the Mizbeach versus the wood and the fire. We learned this at the end of Zvachim as well. Ma Mizbeach shalai nishtamish b'heget, just like the Mizbeach has to be something that was never used by a Heget, because in general clay shoreis that are used in the Beis Mikdash can't have been used for mundane purposes before that. The same thing, the wood and the fire have to be ones that were not previously used. So at the end of Zvachim, for example, we talked about, we had the story over there where Ishra Hormuz, the queen of Persia, sent an animal for a korban to Rava, telling them to bring it as a korban. And she's a goyta, she's allowed to bring korbanos after the business is destroyed. So we discussed over there how Rava gives instructions how it should be accomplished by two goyish boys. And among other things, it involved you should use mud that was never used before, like that was just cast up by the river or by the ocean or whatever. You should use wood that was never used before. You should use a spade to strike on a flint or whatever that was never used before. You have to use. We're saying over here that you have to use things that were never used before. By the way, you have... In other words, for example, the wood can't be, let's say, for example, that came from a building that was torn down, and now... Yeah.
But the first one who brought him in, she
wasn't the first one, no. No. This was this queen, Ishra Hormuz, she said one day, she decided, I want to bring a korban to the Jewish God, so she sends an animal to Rava and says, I want you to offer it to Hashem on my behalf. So Rava... Well, we don't mean it was the first time in history. In that particular time, it was the first time in that period that it was being done. So yeah, therefore, the Rava tells Rav Safra, I think it was, he said, take two goyish boys and have them build a mizbeach out of mud that was cast up by the river or whatever, so that's new, that it wasn't, it's not mud that was used before, it's not dirt that was used before for mundane purposes. Yeah, you build a mizbeach out of mud, you know, whatever, yeah. This is in Babel, you don't really have stones for building. So, yeah. No, you can't build a mizbeach out of wood or burn. No, and then you use wood for firewood. Yeah, then you cut down new wood for firewood, etc. What? No, it's mud. Maybe they made it and then mud for it. What? We talked about that yesterday or 2 days ago. Yes, in principle, you could use any kind of wood on the mizbeach except for wood from olive trees and wood from grapevines. Practically speaking, the Mishnah in Talmud mentions there were certain kinds that they tended to use more than others. Wood from fig trees, wood from sycamore trees, yeah. Anyway, the point, okay. So the Gemara says, my benayir, so what's the actual argument between Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, who mentions that the wood comes from the sibur, like the mizbeach, and Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, who says that it has to be new wood? The answer is, Ikki benayir chadsi, that's the difference between them. According to Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, the wood doesn't necessarily have to be new. It could be used wood. You could have, let's say, wood from a building that was torn down. According to Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, would be kosher for a carbon, would be kosher for using on the mizbeach. According to the laws of Ben Shamua, you have to have new wood. Both of them agree, in other words, that the wood comes from the sibur. No, not necessarily, because you actually were going to say in a second, on the face of it, it wasn't new, but wait, we're going to talk about that in a second.
The one thing
they
agree on,
they both agree that it comes from the sibur, right? You have a focus whether it has to be wood. By the way, there is an implication of that as far as halakha nowadays. You have Rishonim, such as the Aguda, talk about this idea, and it's brought in the later poskim, that in a similar way, they argue that the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, that you need new wood for the mizbeach, and therefore they say the same thing comes to the things that are used in a shul, such as, for example, mantlach for a sefer Torah, and a parochas and other such things, that they have to be new. So you can't, for example, take used clothes and make them into a mantle or a parochas or a gautel for a sefer Torah or what have you. And you have, there's a considerable discussion among Rishonim and Achronim on that issue. Can you or can't you? The Chavos Yoreh wants to be makel on it. If it's transformed to something else entirely, the Chacham Sofer argues that the Chavos Yoreh on that. You have I think the Rambam mentions, or the Magen Avraham, or somebody mentions that in many Kehillos they were makel on this. That you do have opinions that say the halacha is not even like Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua when it comes to the business. So when it comes to the business, certainly all the more so in a shul. So you have opinions that are lenient. So therefore you have Achronim, the Chavos Yoreh being one of them, who say that you can be lenient on such things, and you can make parochas and mantlach and other such things out of used things. There used to be, and there's a well-known thing that in the old Kehillos of Germany, there used to be a minig in the old Kehillos in Germany called there was a minig where they'd have a piece of cloth that they'd wrap up the baby in after the bris. And later on, they would take that cloth, they'd embroider the baby's name on it, various other things, and they'd use it as a gautel for a sefer Torah. So that follows the opinion. Fine, but that follows the opinion that you're allowed to do such a thing. According to the opinions that you can't do it, then they wouldn't have been able to do that. So that's what we mean when we say that the olam is makel on that. That's the kind of thing. Okay. Anyway. going on.
What's
Amin? Well, I've never heard of that minhag among non-Druim and Kehillot. But, I mean, in general, you see nowadays, the English isn't there. Usually. I mean, nowadays, you can afford it. Nowadays, you can afford it. Yeah, anybody who can afford to write a Sefer Torah, which costs several tens of thousands of dollars, can afford a couple hundred bucks for a new mantle, you know, come on. All right, anyway, onwards. Okay, so the question is, Atiki Lois, you're telling me you're not allowed to use old wood according to Rav Elazar and Shamor, you're not allowed to use used wood for on the Mizbeah. The Haksiv, but you have the Pasuk over there, when David buys the granary and everything from Aradna, the Pasuk says, Vayomer Aradna el David, Yikach V'yal Adoni HaMelech, let my master, the king, take and offer to Hashem HaTovei, you know, whatever is good in his eyes, Re'ei, see, I'm giving you a Bokor L'Oila, the cattle over here that I was using for plowing, you can use for a Korban Oila. The Hamerigim and the Merigim, which we'll explain soon, what Merigim are, or Kleya Bokor and the other implements, the other farm tools that are used with the cattle, like the yoke and whatever, La'etim, you can use them for firewood. So for Pashtus, you're talking about these are things that Aravna had been using for years on his farm, and now he's telling David, you can use it for firewood. And the Pasuk ends up saying, okay, David says, I don't want to take it for free, I'll pay for it, but then he used it, yeah. The answer is Hochanami Bechadzi. We have to say that these Merigim or Klei HaBokor were new. They hadn't been used before. Yeah, they'd been made into a Merig or Klei HaBokor, but they hadn't actually been used for that purpose yet. They were new U.S. Okay, my Merigim, what are Merigim? We learned about this in Zvachim and also in Avodah Zarah. What is the definition of Merigim? Ula Mita Shal Turbal. So Ula says it's called a Mita Shal Turbal. Well, they weren't familiar with that term in Babel, my Mita Shal Turbal. So now they need it translated from Eretz Yisrael Lashon to Babel Lashon. Amr Rav Yehuda.
It was
Eretz Yisrael. Amr Rav Yehuda. Iza de Kurkasa de Doshaba de Shtoy. This is a threshing sledge that they says Iza de Kurkasa literally means a goat. Literally means a goat. Iza means a goat, and the kokata means a piece of wood that has a lot of little sharp rocks and things or pegs or whatever stuck into it. The doshu badishoi that the threshers use to thresh. In English, it's called a threshing sledge. It's a piece of wood. It's a flat piece of wood. They make grooves at the bottom of it, or they hammer in nails and rocks and things like that. That way it's rough. That way, when you stand on it, and use it on the grain, and it breaks open the shells so that you can get the seeds out of the shells. That's the thing, it's made out of wood, so he was able to use it for firewood.
Oh, stones within the wood?
Yes, stones, you have pegs, yeah, different people made it different ways. The point is it has to be rough. Amr of Yosef, my cross, and Yosef says, where's the pasuk where you see the idea of what a murder is? The pasuk says, Nishaya, Hine Samtich L'murag Chorus Chodesh. Hashem says to the Jewish people, behold, I've made you like a new grooved murag. So we see that a murag is something that has grooves. A murag, we just said, is a threshing sledge, but has grooves in it. So I have made you, Hashem says to the Jewish people, like a new grooved threshing sledge, Baal Pifiyah, which has sharp edges. Chodesh Horim, you will thresh the mountains. In other words, Hashem is saying to the Jewish people, like the mountains represent the powerful Goyim, Hashem is saying, I'm giving you the power to break them down and wear them down, Limos HaMashiach in particular, that you'll be the ones on top and they'll be ground down. So we see that a Morag is something that's used for grinding, for threshing or whatever, and it has sharp.
We have seen the grounding instruments, raising mountains.
Yeah, okay, if you use it long enough on a mountain, it would grind down. Okay, the point is, that's it. The point is, we see what a murag is from this pasuk. We see that it has grooves and it has sharp edges, and it's used for wearing things down. So that's what it is, a threshing sledge. Okay.
So
that's the bottom line. The conclusion is, therefore, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, you have to have, according to both of them, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon and Rabbi Elazar ben Shamura, the wood for korbanos comes from the sibur. The yachid does not have to bring wood for their own korban. According to Rabbi Elazar and Shamor. In addition, the wood also has to be new wood. It cannot be from you. It cannot be, for example, from a building or a keli or whatever that was broken up for wood. Okay.
The whole thing.
Well, that was a separate thing, right? There was a period in Jewish history when the kings, either it was Yerovam and company, or it was later on the Goyish kings or whatever, wouldn't allow them to bring wood for the korban eitzim, so therefore they would make ladders out of them, and then they'd take the ladders apart and bring the wood to the Beit HaMikdash. Fine. So that's according to Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, there's no problem with that. Even according to Rabbi Elazar ben Shamor, we're saying over here, if the ladders were never actually used to climb up on, then there'd be no issue. Just like there's no issue with Aravna's new threshing sledge, is another thing. Yeah.
come eat and they did a whole procedure.
Right. So normally they would have a whole procession. In this case, they have to do it secretly. Right. Yeah. Okay. Mishnah says, Nis'arev kumsa b'komet chavata. What happens if you have the komet of one mincha just mixed together with the komet of another mincha? No, the pashtas are more or less the same size. That's not the issue. But the issue is, did one absorb from the other? Yeah. Or the minchas koinim, or you had a komet of a mincha that was mixed together with a minchas koinim, which is going to anyway be burned on the mezeach. Or the minchas koin mashiach, same thing, if it was mixed with the mincha of koin mashiach. The Kohen Mashiach, or the Minchas Chamitin, the Minchas Nisachin, or if it was mixed up with the Minchas Nisachin, all of those things are burnt completely on the Mizeach, therefore no problem. Shera, it's kosher, because you're anyway going to burn the whole thing on the Mizeach. Rabbi Yehuda says it depends. I don't agree to all of those. The Minchas Kohen Mashiach, the Minchas Nisachin, no, if the Kohenet gets mixed up with the Minchas Kohen Mashiach, or the Minchas Nisachin, Sula, then it will be possible. In fact, Rashi and Tosfos learn that it means that both Rashi learns that it means that both the Koimet and the other Mincha will be possible, because one absorbs too much oil from the other one. Tosfos discusses a little bit, does it mean that? Does it mean maybe only the Koimet is possible? Anyway, the point is, Shazubli lost the other, because Rabbi Yehuda says like this, the Koimet of a regular Mincha is mixed very thickly. You have one isar in a flour and one log of oil.
A regular mincha
is one isar in a flour and one log of oil. The zubli lost a rasa. Whereas he says, when it comes to the minchas koyed mashiach and the minchas nesachim, it's a much more liquidy mix. It's much more liquidy mix. In the case of the minchas koyed mashiach,
there's more oil.
In the case of the Minchas Koyin Mashiach and the Minchas Nesachim, what you have is you have three logim of oil to one isar in a flour. There's three times as much oil. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda argues that then you have a problem. So therefore, you have one absorbed from the other one. So therefore, now you have the Koyin that has too much oil in it. The Minchas Nesachim now has too little oil, or Minchas Koyin Mashiach or whatever, has too little oil in it, and therefore they're possible. That's fine, but nevertheless, the fact is that one of them absorbed too much, and the other one absorbed, and the other one has too little in it now. So Rabbi Yehuda says, you have a problem over here.
You put them one in contact with the other? Or?
That's what we're talking about, when they got mixed together. Yeah. That's the issue. So again, Rashi is saying that according to Rabbi Yehuda, both of them would be possible. The Shittim Kubetis talks about that, also Tosfos mentions it briefly, the Shittim Kubetis goes into more detail, that maybe you could say that only the Koimet is the one that has a problem because it absorbed too much oil, maybe the Minchas Nesachim won't be possible. Okay, anyway, the point is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're going to have something possible over here, whereas according to the Chachamim, it's not an issue. We're going to deal with this whole issue in terms of the usual dinim of bittul. So therefore, we're going to bring in the whole concept of bittul, the whole concept of bittul min b'minoy, min b'she'enoy, minoy. So the Gemara starts off. Tnan hasam. We learned in a Mishnah in Zvachim. We had a whole perek in Zvachim on the subject of tadruvus and bittul. So we learned in a Mishnah in that perek. Damshin is arav b'mayim. If you have blood of a korban that was mixed with water. In Yeshbe Maris Dam, if the mixture still looks like blood, which Tosfos says doesn't just mean it's a little bit reddish, it means it actually still really looks like blood. It's thick, it's deep red, whatever. Then fine, kosher, that's kosher to sprinkle on the Mizeach. But if not, then not. Nis'ar of Begayin, what about if the blood got mixed with wine, and wine is similar in color to blood, so even if you have a lot of wine, it might, that's close enough. Therefore, and what you do is you consider as though that wine was water, and you figure out, therefore, would this be, if it had been water, would it be enough to make that now this mixture does not look like blood anymore? If yes, then it's possible. If not, then it's kosher. What about this arab b'dam behema or b'dam chaya? What about if the blood of the korban gets mixed with the blood of a behema or a chaya?
First we had where it was mixed with water.
Then we had where it was mixed with wine. Now we have where blood of a korban is mixed with other cholin blood from a behema or a chaya. Again, royanoise, kilo umayim, same thing. We consider that other blood as if it was water, and we figure out the proportion. There, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. Rabbi Yehuda oimer ein dam mevatel dam. Rabbi Yehuda says, even if you had a large amount of cholin blood, the blood is not mevatel blood, therefore it would be kosher. Now, we discussed over there in Zvachim, the Chum disagree with that, right? So we're going to see it. So we're going to see now. We're going to talk about now. Where the Chachamim get their opinion and where Rabbi Yehuda gets his. By the way, we learned in Zvachim there's a difference. We're talking about which one fell into which one. Is it the Chulin blood fell into the Kodeshim blood, or is it the other way around? Here we're not getting into that level of detail. But we had over there in the Gemara, we had Rabbi Yochanan saying that if the Kodeshim blood falls into the Chulin blood, then it becomes Vatel, Rishin, Vatel. We had a whole discussion about it. That's the point. Right. Okay. Amr Rabbi Yochanan, Ushneim Mikra Echab Dorshu. So Rabbi Yochanan says, both the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda are both darshaning the same pasuk to get their respective opinions. Rabbi Yehuda, that dam is never mevatel dam, and the Chachamim, that it could be. Namely like this, by the Korbanos of Yom Kippur, we know that the two Korbanos that the Kohen Gadol brings the blood into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and into the Heichal, you have a par and you have a sor. And eventually you mix them together. The pasuk is v'lokas midam ha'par midam ha'sor. He takes from the blood of the par and the blood of the sor and mixes them together and applies it to the mizbeach hazav. Now, hadavar yadua shadama shal par merubu dama shal sor. Now we know that a par, which is a much physically larger animal, it has a lot more blood than a sor. And yet we're saying that the blood of a par is not mevatel the blood of the sor.
All the blood that we take from the fire.
We take all the dam and nefesh from the par. We take all the dam and nefesh from the fire, or as much as possible that we can get. Because a par is physically larger, therefore it's going to have more dam and nefesh. Yes, of course you're going to have blood that's still left in the capillaries and in the flesh and whatever. Fine, that can't be helped. That's not dam and nefesh. That's dam and nefesh. But you're going to have, the amount you get out of the par after you shaft it is going to be much larger than you get out of the fire. Yeah. That's not the point. Well, right. The point is we're saying that the par's blood is not mevatel the sor's blood. So what? Even though it's more. So Rabbanan sadly. So the Rabbanan learn like this. Mikan lo oilin she'en mevatel zezeh. So the Chachamim say like this. It's not that one min is not. It's not that min b'mino is not mevatel. It teaches us that things that are offered on the mizbeach cannot be mevatel one another. So therefore, fine, if you have blood of one korban that gets mixed in with blood of another korban, then fine, no problem. But if blood of a korban got mixed in with blood of chulin, where the blood of chulin doesn't go on the mizbeach, that's different. Then they would say you have to figure out how much there would be in order to be miraculous.
Yeah, but the dam from a far doesn't make a difference.
Right, because they're both oilin.
The dam far is much more.
That's the point, because they're oilin, because they both go on the mizbeach. By the way, there's a classic ram in Nidorim. There's a sugi in Nidorim that deals with the whole issue of min b'mina and min b'shein and minay. And there's a classic ram over there that goes through. We learned it when we learned Nidorim. We discussed it a bit about the details of this whole concept of min b'mina and min b'shein and minay. One thing the ram points out over there is, first of all, when we say olin over here, we don't necessarily mean olin. We mean any two things that are heter. He says, when we talk about that one thing is mevatel or another, we're talking about when you have a heter and iser. Here we're talking about two things of heter. Right. Therefore, the Chachamim are going to say one is not mevatel or the other. Then do you talk about iser when one is heter and one is iser? Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says that from here we learn that one min in its own min is not bottle. So therefore, in other words, the blood of the pyre and the blood of the sire are both done. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda generalizes from that no dam can be mevatel other dam. As opposed to the Chachamim say, that's limited only to oilin, only to things that go on the mizbeach. That's the point. So if we have blood of kodshim mixed with blood of kolin, the Chachamim are going to say those aren't both oilin. One is heter, one is iser. Therefore, one is mevatel the other. If you have more, if you have too much of it. It depends on the quantity. According to the other, min b'mina, ain't in bottle. It doesn't matter that one's colon and one's kutchen. They're both physically blood, and therefore we don't care. Yeah. Okay. So now let's analyze that machlokes a little bit. Rabbanan sabri mikam lo olin shein mevatel zezeh. So the question is, b'dilma mishum b'min b'mina hu. Why do the Chachamim say that it just teaches us about the case where they both are offered on the mizbeach? Maybe they should agree with Rabbi Yehuda that it teaches us that in general, min b'mina is not bottle. The answer is Yashmin and Min Mamina, Lo Yashmin and Olin. Sure, but if the Torah had told us this concept in connection with two things that are the same mean, but it hadn't told us in connection with things that are offered on the Mizbeach, namely the blood of the pyre and the blood of the Sar, Kiddika Amrit, then fine, you have a point. You could say that it teaches us in general that Min Mamina ain't a bother. Hash the Yashmin and Olin, but the Chachamim will say, because the Torah mentions this concept only in connection with blood of Korbanos, which is offered, then we have to say Mishum the Olin. Then the only reason why it's not Mavasal is because it's Olin, not because Min B'mina in general is not Mavasal. question is,
everything else,
they would say min the min the min is also, yeah. So the question is, okay, but maybe the Chachamim should say that it means, maybe the Pasuk is implying that you have to have both factors in order for it not to be bottle. It has to be the same min, and they both have to be Olin. And yet the Chachamim are saying that Olin are not Mevatel, in other words, even if they're two different min. In other words, the Chachamim are not just saying that blood of one korban is not Mevatel blood of another korban. The Chachamim are also saying, for example, that, let's say, that that wine that's going to be offered on the Mizbeach is not Mevatel blood of a korban, because they're both Olin. But if you're telling wine is Olin, what do you mean? Not wine of Kulin, wine of Olin, wine that's meant to go on the Mizbeach. The Chachamim, the Pashtus, would say that that's not Mevatel, that's not Mevatel either, because Olin are not Mevatel one another. The question is, why not? If the Chachamim are learning from the blood of the pyre and the blood of the sire, which is also min b'mino, maybe they should say you need both factors. It needs to be both Olin, but it also needs to be both the same physical min. They both need to be blood. And this is Kasha, you're right, that's Kasha on the Chachamim's shita. Okay, nevertheless, that this is how they hold, but it's hard to say that they learn it exactly from this process. Ultimately, we have to say that
they would have to say both factors, right.
Okay, so it means, in other words, they don't get it only from this pasuk. They have the Kabbalah from their Rebbeim, this is how it is. The pasuk is to a certain extent an asmasa for it. Okay. Zer Rabbi Yehuda Safa, and Rabbi Yehuda holds the other way around. Mikan min b'mino she'ein b'tol. That Rabbi Yehuda holds in general min b'mino is not b'tol. And so the question is, b'dum l'mishum d'orzen hu. Why? Let him say, like the Chachamim, that it means only when they're both orzen. How does he know that this concept of min b'mino ein b'tol applies even when they're not orzen? Because again, here we're talking about the blood of the pyre and the blood of the sire, which are both orzen. The answer is, yashmin and orzen min b'she'ein b'mino. Sure, but Rabbi Yehuda says, fine, but in that case, the Torah could have told us this concept when it comes to two things that are offered on the Zeach, but they're two different minis. Let's say wine and blood. Then kidikanmer. Then you'd have a point that we learn from that that only that they have to be over. Hashkes to dashmin and min b'mino. But Rabbi Yehuda says, given that the pasuk tells us this concept of no bittul when it's min b'mino, it must be from min b'mino. It must be because they're both the same min. Again, the question on Rabbi Yehuda is the reverse of the question you had on the Chachamim. The doma ad ikam min b'mino yo'olin. Or the same thing as the Chachamim. Maybe according to Rabbi Yehuda, we should say the pasuk is implying you need both factors. It has to be min b'mino, both blood. It also has to both be oilin. How does Rabbi Yehuda know that min b'mino is not bottle even when it has nothing to do with oilin?
Like wine.
For example, wine being about the wine, or yes, it comes up in different places in chat where Rabbi Yehuda holds that min b'mino is not bottle. It comes up in even when it's not in connection with function. And again, kasha. Again, it's a kasha on Rabbi Yehuda's shita. Right. Okay. Tosfos, you can see there's a long Tosfos over here, Rabbi Yehuda, which Tosfos goes into a long discussion about all the pros and cons of, are we actually saying that Rabbi Yehuda is saying that always min b'mino ein b'tol, or are there exceptions to that? Are there cases where Rabbi Yehuda would also agree that min b'mino is b'tol? Tosfos goes through many different sugyas and shafts, where we discuss different things like that. Yeah, there can be a difference between liquids and solids. There can be it gets into a whole long thing, which eventually becomes this Tosfos is one of the big sources for the whole issue of what's bottle and what isn't bottle when we get to Hilchos Tarovah. Yeah. Okay. we're gonna have a certain amount of it in Chulin. And in Chulin, and then in the Prakim over there that deal with Basa B'cholav and other mixture of Isser B'hatzer. Yeah, we had it in Zvachim as well, yeah. Yeah, it's part of Sinecha as well, yeah. Okay. Also, Tosfos discusses there can be a difference. The Gemara itself is going to talk about later on, in connection with the next Mishnah, the Gemara is going to talk about an issue. Is the thing that you're trying to make bottle, is it capable of becoming like the thing that you want it to be bottle in or not? So we're talking about Nevela versus Shchuta, for example, so that may also factor into it over here. For example, blood of Cholim can't become blood of Kodshin because it's already a done deal, but yeah. Okay.
Blood.
Well, that's according to Rabbi Yehuda. Ain dam mevatel dam. Therefore, it doesn't matter how little blood of Kodshin there is in there.
And according to Rabbi Yehuda, then what could happen? The fact that they don't mix.
So it doesn't matter. No, it doesn't matter that they don't mix. Min b'mino ein b'tol means even if you have that a huge amount of Kulin blood got mixed up with a tiny amount of Kodshin blood, Rabbi Yehuda will say, that's okay. You can still go and sprinkle it on the Mizeh. Okay. So now let's deal with how that relates to our mission. So we learned in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, b'minchas koinim, b'minchas koin, Mashiach of minchas nesachim tzola. We said that Rabbi Yehuda says if the koinim of one mincha gets mixed up with the minchas chavitim, or the mincha of the koin gadol, or the minchas nesachim, we said tzola, shezubli lasa ova, v'zubli lasa raka, because we said that the koin mincha is a thick mixture, so you have one isar and a flour and one log of oil, versus the minchas nesachim and the minchas koin Mashiach, which is one log of flour to three logim of oil. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says you have a problem. One absorbs from the other. So the question is, so what's the problem if one absorbs from the other? Min b'minay. Who is the case of min b'minay? So why should Rabbi Yehuda say there's a problem?
But one is thick and one is not thick.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Okay. In fact, the Chidushim HaMiuchasim, in fact, one second. The Chidushim HaMiuchasim La Rashba explained like this. If Rabbi Yehuda is saying, min b'mina in a bottle, it means, in other words, sure, physically a certain amount of the oil from the Kohenet has moved around in the container and now it's someplace else. Doesn't matter. If min b'mina in a bottle, we still consider that oil as if it's still in the Kohenet. We still consider the oil from the Minchas Nesachim or whatever as if it's, so that's the question. So why does he have a problem?
Oil.
No, but that's the point. If min b'mina ain't a bottle, that it's not bottle, it's not considered as if it didn't mix. The answer is, Omar Rava, yes, but Rava says here is the issue. Kasava Rabbi Yehuda holds like this. Kol shehu min b'mina, fine, but you have a case over here where you have min b'mina, you have flour with flour, you have oil with oil, but the dover acher, but you have another thing mixed in over here. So what do you have over here? You have flour, and you have two different amounts of oil. Again, you have one isarin versus three isarin. But fine, the oil, you can say, is not bottled. So it's min b'mina. But you also have flour over there. Therefore, he says, therefore, in that case, what you have to do is take away the mina and consider as if it wasn't there, and therefore, v'she'en mina, rob all the mavasim. The minoy is the oil. So you take away, you have two oils and you have flour. So it's at this point, you have to consider as if you take away the oil, as if some of the oil doesn't exist over there, v'she'en mina, rob all the mavasim, and then you have the flour is going to exceed it in volume, and therefore it's going to be mavasim. So therefore, in other words, what you have is that you take the oil of the koimet and consider as if it wasn't there. Now you have the flour of the koimet is more than the amount of oil from the minchas nesachim that now got absorbed into that koimet, and therefore the flour is mevatel. Now the koimet has no oil in it, therefore you have a problem. And according to Rashi, the minchas nesachim now has too little oil in it, so you also have a problem. No, but that's what we're saying. In other words, because we have min b'mina, but we also have a she'enei mina over here, then that's different. Rabbi Yehuda is saying min b'mina in a bottle when you only have the two meaning together, nothing else. If you had one log of oil and three logim of oil mixed together, fine, he would say no problem. Ain shemen mevatel shemen. But because you also have flour in here, then therefore the flour ends up being mevatel of oil.
But
that's Rabbi Yehuda saying that that's how it is. Yeah.
No, you apply these rules when you have two things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what we're saying. Yeah. In fact, Tosafot points out that you also have when we get the chulin, when we get to issue with the boss of the chalav, we're going to have Sylvia as the boss of the chalav over there. We're going to have that concept brought up also. Okay. So now we have another discussion of Amiroyim on a related topic. Now, we know a minchas choyte, we've discussed a number of times before, is a mincha that is only flour, right? It's a mincha that's brought as a korban out of the earth. It's supposed to be only flour, no oil and no levina. What happens if after you took the kohimus, you put some oil on the kohimus? Rabbi Yochanan says that it will be possible. Because you added oil. But Rashlokish says that won't make it possible. What you can do is, even lachatchila, you can take that koimet, you can rub it around in the mishachsh, like the rub or move it or shake it around or whatever. Yeah, we have that word over and over and over. Is that, for example? Yeah. So he can take it, you can swirl it around, the shiore halug, in the leftover oil of the lug that's used for a carbon mincha, because as Tosfos points out, now you're supposed to have, when you bring a korban mincha, you're supposed to bring a log of oil in it. But Tosfos points, and you have to use the whole log of oil in the mincha. Nevertheless, though, lo nisna Torah malach asheret, the Torah doesn't demand the impossible. Practically speaking, after you pour the oil out of the container, you're going to have a little bit of oil still stuck to the sides of the container. That, Rish Lakish is saying, is you're allowed to take that kremet of a minchas koja, you're allowed to swirl it around in the keli over there, and then pick up the leftover oil that's in there, umaleu, and then you can offer it on the mezeach that way.
Because
he's saying
the oil that,
in other words, you have a, not by mistake, hold on. You're talking about like this. You have a person is bringing, you have Reuben is bringing a minchas koja. Meanwhile, at the same time, you have Shimon is bringing a voluntary mincha, and Levi is the Kohen Gadol, and he's bringing his minchas chavetz. And the point is, you have containers of oil around this mincha. The oil is being poured into the respective menachos, but you always have a little bit of oil left in the container. Therefore, Rish Lakish is saying the Kohen who's handling the minchas chavetz, after he took the kohenet, he's entitled to take that dry kohenet, the flour, and swirl it around in one of these containers that has a little leftover oil. And then he can go burn it on the mezeach, and then he can offer it on the mezeach. The fact that there's a little bit of oil in it does not possible it, as long as it was dry at the time of the knitza. Okay, so the question is, what do you mean, Bach? The pasuk says, you're not supposed to put oil on it, and you're not supposed to put levona on it. The answer is, now, fine, Rish Lakish is saying, all that means is, you can't establish that there should be oil with it like there would be with a normal mincha. You can't put oil in it before the knitza. But after the knitza, if you put a little bit of oil in it, it's not a problem.
Why would
we
want
to
put oil down?
Okay, because maybe this way it'll stick together better and therefore it's easier to throw on the mezeach, whatever it is. He's entitled to do that, says Rish Lakish. Well, this is, it's Amiroyim. It's a discussion of Amiroyim. It's not a discussion of Amiroyim. You have Rabbi Yechanan against Rish Lakish. Rabbi Yechanan saying it has to stay dry until it reaches the mizbeach, completely dry, and Rish Lakish is saying that you can mix a little bit of oil in it. Ain't say Rabbi Yechanan to Rish Lakish. So Rabbi Yechanan says, Rabbi Yechanan, I have a contradiction for you from a braisa. A braisa says, Chorev shenis arev bebolol, if you have a dry mincha that was mixed together with a mixed mincha, mixed meaning, in other words, that's mixed with flour and oil, a regular run-of-the-mill mincha, Yakiv, you're able to offer the whole mixture, because again, the Rabbanon said, as they said before, Oilin ein mevatlin zeseh, so even though one is only flour and the other one is flour and oil, doesn't matter, the Chacham would say one's not mevatlin the other, therefore no problem. Rabbi Yehuda omer lo Yakiv, and Rabbi Yehuda said you can't offer it. Because he said before, yeah. Now my, well, here it's not even min b'mino, right, because one is flour and one is flour and oil, right. My love, kremitz de minchas koita, di arva kremitz de minchas nedova. Now, lechora, what are we talking about when we say dry that was mixed with bowl? Lechora, we mean a minchas koita that was mixed with a kremitz of a minchas nedova. And we say, my love, shouldn't we say that? That's the case we're talking about. The Rabbanon are saying, now what are the Rabbanon are saying that you can be mocked with them because oilin ein mevatlin zezeh? Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, if you have the minchas nedava still intact and you have the kremitz of it still intact, then fine. The Chacham are going to say you can be massive the parts that have to go on the mezeach. But here you're talking about the case that Rabbi Yechon and Rish Lakish are talking about is you took some oil that was originally meant for another mincha and you mixed it with the kremitz of the minchas poiter. Even the Rabbanim shouldn't be saying you can be massive.
It's not a question of oil, really. It's a question of offering to
from one. Yeah. So therefore, that would contradict Rish Lakish. The answer is fine. No, that's not necessarily what the case is talking about. Minchas porim ve'elim minchas kvasim. We can say we're talking about all minchas nesachim. However, within minchas nesachim themselves, you have different consistencies. Namely like this, Rashi explains. We're going to learn about this in more detail later on in the Sefer, but you have like this. The minchas nesachim for sheep, you have three different kinds of animals that can be brought as korbanos, right? Sheep. You have sheep, well, sheep and goats are considered essentially the same thing. You have rams and you have cattle. Well, they're not the same species, but they're close enough. They're both called tsoin. You have ayo, which is a ram, and you have buffalo, which is cattle. For a sheep or for a goat, the amount is you have three, you have you have one isaron of flour and three logim of oil. So the ratio is 1 to 3.
For a goat.
When it comes to Elim and Purim, you have a larger amount of flour and a larger amount of oil, and the proportion is different. For an ayo, you have two esroinim and you have two esroinim and four logim, so it's 1 to 2. So two to four, so 1 to 2. Before it was one to three. For a par, you have 3 esroinim and 6 logim, so again 1 to 2. So therefore, the consistency of the minchas nesachim of an ayo or of a par is different. It's thinner because you have more oil than for a keves where you have only 3 times. The other way around. For a keves, it's thinner because for a keves you have 3 times as much oil, and for a par and an ayo, you only have twice as much oil as.
For a keves,
it's 1 and 3.
1 and 3.
For an ayo, it's 2 and 4. And for a par, it's 3 and 6. So 2 and 4 and 3 and 6 is the same proportion,
right.
But 1 and 3 is not.
Right.
So therefore, that's what we mean. When we talk about, the Gemara is saying, when we talk about over here a dry mincha that was mixed together with a moist mincha,
right.
We don't necessarily mean dry as in a mincha chayta where there's no oil in it at all, versus a moist mincha, meaning the regular kind that has oil in it. We can mean within minchas nesachim themselves, you have a drier kind and you have a moister kind. The keves is moister because it has more oil proportionally. It has three logim of oil to one isar in a flour, whereas the other ones are drier. The other ones are drier because you only have two logim of oil to every isar in a flour. So that's what we can be talking about. Minchas Purim ve'elim, the minchas klasim. We can be talking about, Resh Lakish can answer, that the Braisa is talking about if you have a dry mincha, meaning the mincha of a par or ayo, which relatively speaking is drier because it has less oil, is mixed with a mincha of klasim, which proportionately is wetter, is moister.
3 to 1 versus 2 to 1.
Yes. Yeah. So therefore, so that Braisa is not necessarily a contradiction to Resh Lakish. Resh Lakish would say that, yes, the Braisa is not talking about a case of a minchas choyse. That you could have, there's no problem to begin with, as Resh Lakish is saying. Okay. So the question is, v'hal b'hedik katani law. Okay, but you don't need that because the Braisa explicitly continues to say that case. Because the Braisa continues, minchas ponim ve'elam minchas kvasim, if you have the mincha of a par or ayo that was mixed with a mincha of kvasim, or v'chorav shenis arev v'balol, or a dry mincha that was mixed with a moist mincha, yikrav, v'pashra setting v'chorav, we're not going to be mincha kodesh. Yikrav means dry, yes. Yikrav, you still offer it. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yikrav. So there you have it. Braisa seems to clearly be talking about two different cases. One is where they're both moist, they both have oil, but one has more oil and one has less, different proportions of oil, and the other one where one has no oil and yes. The answer is Resh Lakish can answer Purushi Kamapanishma. Resh Lakish can answer, okay, the Braisa doesn't mean two different cases. The Braisa means what is an example of corruption? It's out of the bowl would be Minchas Purim Ve'elam and Minchas Kvasim. It's not necessarily two separate cases. Resh Lakish can answer, it could mean that the corruption is out of the bowl is an explanation. What's the problem with Purim Ve'elam versus Kvasim is that one is drier than the other. But not necessarily that we're talking about a case where one of them is completely dry, where Resh Lakish. No. Minchas parim ve'elam and minchas kvasim. Namely, that amounts to chorib, shenis out of a bowl. That amounts to a drier mincha mixed with a moister mincha. Resh Lakish can understand the braisa that way, so it's not necessarily a contradiction to him. The halacha is like Rabbi Yechonin anyway. The halacha is in almost all of Shas, in almost all cases in Shas, the halacha is like Rabbi Yechonin against Resh Lakish. Yeah. Okay. Boy Rava, Pir Rava asked another question. Koimis shemitza shamnoi agabe eisim mahu. What happens if you were to take the kumis of a mincha and squeeze out the oil from it onto wood? What do you mean? They're flour and oil, they're mixed together. It's possible to physically take the kumis and squeeze the oil out so that some of the oil lands on wood. So the question...
The
mincha is flour and oil, no? So you take the kumis, he takes the kumis in his hand, and what do you mean? Why is it hard to mix flour mixed with oil? Yeah, you take it and you squeeze it, and the oil drifts out and then lands on some wood. So what would be the din? Let's learn the rest of the question, and then we'll talk about there's many different explanations among the Rishonim of what Rava's question is. But first, the underlying question is, do we say that something that's attached to something that's to be offered on the Mizbeach is considered like something that itself goes on the Mizbeach. Olav ka'olim domu, or does it not? So what are we talking about over here? Okay, so Rashi starts by saying like this. Rashi's first explanation is, once that oil is missing from the koimet, do we say, now the fact of the matter is, where are you gonna, what are you going to do with that koimet afterwards? You're going to take it, you're going to put it on that very same wood and burn it. So do we say, therefore, it's considered as if it's connected back together? Once they're connected together when they're being offered on the Mizbeach, then it's okay, and therefore the koimet is not missing anything, therefore it's kosher. Or maybe not. Once the oil was squeezed out onto that wood, then it's missing from the koimet, and there's no getting it back.
Why would we do that? Why would
he do it? I don't know why he'd do it, but let's say he did do it.
And he squeezed it on the wood. On the wood.
Right.
And then on the Mizbeach, they can't come
back. They come back both together. Right. That's Rashi's first explanation. Rashi's second explanation is that the question is, let's say that wood that it landed on is not wood that's on the top of the Mizbeach. Let's say it's just wood that's not anywhere on the Mizbeach. Do you have to take that wood and offer it on the Mizbeach together with the Mincha? Otherwise, we have a problem with the claim that it's kosher or not. So those are Rashi's two explanations of what the question is. Let's say the wood wasn't on the Mizbeach for whatever reason. Let's say it's wood that could go on the Mizbeach, but it didn't go yet. The question is, are you obligated to put that wood on the Mizbeach or not? Then Tosfos gives a third explanation, that you have some of the wood got absorbed, some of the oil got absorbed into the wood. The rest of it is still on the surface of the wood. So therefore, the question is, do we consider what was absorbed into the wood, do we consider as that is connected with the oil that's on the outside of the wood, because they're all connected together, or maybe not? That's Tosfos' explanation. Then the Rambam has yet another explanation based on a different girsa. The Rambam's girsa in our Gemara is not etzim, but etzem, which means a bone. And therefore, the Rambam would understand the question as follows. We learned in Zvachim that if a bone of a korban that's not attached to meat falls off the Mizbeach, you don't have to put it back. Here the question would be, if some of the oil of a mincha was squeezed onto a bone, does that bone now fall off the Mizbeach? Does it have to be put back because of the oil of the mincha that went into it? No, but it's a different kind of, it's similar to Rashi's second explanation as far as the wood, but somewhat different. All right, so it's my time now, so we'll continue tomorrow.
Well, the bone, you don't have to put
that. That's according to the Rambam. That's the point. According to the Rambam, the question is, do we consider that this bone has to be put back with an oil of a mincha on it, or maybe not? Maybe we don't consider that.
The bone alone
wouldn't have to be put back.